welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Welcome to day two of our week of special episodes. I'm on vacation, so is Nicole. Just a brief one in the free state of Florida while we move into a new podcast studio. So all week, we're bringing you in-depth interviews on timely topics. On the show yesterday, we were joined by Jim Walsh, who's the chair of the Washington State Republican Party, and we had some fun sparring over how the state convention went.
It kills me inside that because Dave Reichert has been pegged as some rhino, that the viciousness directed at him, directed at people who dare support him, is more prevalent than a united front to get the most terrifying prospect our state has faced in years to make sure he doesn't hit the governor's office. That's what freaks me out.
What you are describing is the kind of Potemkin village of a convention that I'm not going to be part of.
Yeah,
I'll take the messy. I'll take the real. Because, Brandi, the messy and the real is how we build real change. You don't build real change out of phony unity in a scripted, phony convention.
It's my job
as the state party chair to bring that rage to a place where it channels into productive action.
So given the fact that we spent a lot of time talking to Jim Walsh about my sense of kind of Republican disarray and division within the party, there's someone else in the gubernatorial race that really hopes, besides Bob Ferguson, to capitalize off of that division, and that is State Senator Mark Mullett. So Senator Mullett is a moderate Democrat. He's been kind of shunned by his own party for being too moderate, similar to how Dave Reichert has been shunned by Republicans, some Republicans, for being too moderate. And Mark Mullett, you know, similar to Semi Byrd, he hasn't been doing too well in polling, although he's been doing much better in fundraising. And he lacks, I think, critical name recognition. But he's hoping that some of what's happening within the Republican Party will push moderate Republicans and disenfranchised Democrats his way. Mark Mullett, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, glad to be back.
Yeah, you were telling me, am I a Democrat that comes on more than any other? Close, probably, like right up there, and I appreciate it. You have to be very happy with the way the last few weeks have went for your opponents.
Well, I think we always felt there was going to be a split on the Republican side between the Trump wing of the party and the non-Trump wing of the party.
Yeah.
And so we felt that's always been in existence going back to when I announced last summer. And I think it just became more public knowledge, I think, this last weekend. But we felt strongly that's always been a dynamic that's been playing out.
Yeah, because you kind of are relying on that rift in the GOP to try to get past the primary. Is that a fair characterization?
That is an absolute fair characterization.
Yeah. I want to say something in case it hasn't been clear to you. I would be just fine if I wake up the day after the election and it's Governor-elect Mark Mullett. You do realize that, right?
I appreciate you saying that.
I would, in fact, I would probably celebrate with a mimosa in the morning. And it's because I really genuinely, anyone but Bob, I said I'll vote for a sock puppet over Bob. But I value your willingness to go against your party. I think that's a very good quality in today's political landscape. So let me just start there. In case you weren't
clear. And you could drink the night of. You don't have to wait till the morning.
Well, that's true. So. I mean, I might just carry that booze in all the way through. But the ballot drops come so late, sometimes not clear. But I want you to know that because I know you know I've endorsed Dave Reichert. And it's not out of some loyalty to Dave. It's just because I still struggle to see your path through the primary. Do you feel that there is a legitimate path through the primary for you?
100%. I mean, I think that I will be honest. I think we've always felt like we can get around one out of four voters in the primary. We've always felt like there is a clear path to get somewhere in, you know, the mid to upper 20% on primary night, given the fact that we have four candidates basically predominantly in the race. And that's been our math from the very beginning. And we still think if, as we communicate and educate voters about, you know, the importance of affordability, the importance of public safety improvements, and the fact that we think I have the best viable path to beat Bob Ferguson.
Yeah. Now, Bob almost never acknowledges your existence.
That's by design. Notice he did acknowledge my existence
one time
when the campaign launched. Yep. I think Bob was super nervous. And then I think Bob always preferred to have kind of a Republican mm-hmm. boogeyman where he could use to try to drive up his fundraising. And so he quickly pivoted, I think, to try to pretend like, hey, there's no other Democrats in the race. And
yeah.
I think that's why these next few months are really important. We want to educate voters. So there's options.
Could it be that he's not acknowledging your existence because he doesn't see you as a legitimate threat?
I think that my prediction is Bob's going to talk more and more about our campaign as we yeah. go forward here in the next few months. I think there's one thing Bob Ferguson's cheering for on primary mm-hmm. night, August 6th, and that's not to have to face Mark Mullett in the general election.
Well, I do agree.
That's what he's cheering for.
If you make it through the primary, it's done. You will be the next governor of the state of Washington.
And so I think you're going to see, as Bob plays this out in the next few months, I think, yeah, he's going to have to acknowledge that's his biggest risk, is having a moderate Democrat get out of the primary. And like you said, mm-hmm. I think at that point, the game's over.
Yeah. How do you move down? I've spoken to, you know, on background, so I shouldn't disclose private conversations, but Democrats who feel that if they are not aligned with Bob Ferguson, there is some like hell to pay on the, in the future. And that's true that, you know, some endorsements. I mean, God, I had Jim Farrell on the record questioning him why he endorsed Bob Ferguson. It just made no sense to me. And the best reason he could come up with is they went to college together and had the same chess coach. And I'm like, that's a dude. And I gave him crap for it. I was like, that's not a great reason to endorse him. But do you get the sense from your Democratic friends that they are fearful, maybe not fearful, but hesitant to run afoul of Bob Ferguson?
I think fearful is actually the right word. I think it's, and this is why I think I'm so nervous about him being in the governor's office, is he's very petty and vindictive, and there's a lot of retribution. I think everyone, you know, you talk about the efforts on my behalf mm-hmm. to make sure there's some communication efforts so people know about me being in the race. He's already reached out to those groups with kind of, hey, you're going to regret doing that sort of type mentality. And so this is very clear. I think this is how he operates. And I don't think it's healthy for our democracy. And it's, what's most frustrating to me is he'll do that. But we've asked Bob Ferguson publicly to debate, like the Seattle mm-hmm. City Club offered to have us debate. And I was really disappointed he wasn't willing to take us up on that.
Yeah, he's not interested in a primary debate.
He is not interested in having a public discussion with the other Democrat in the race about where we sit on these issues and how we think about public policy. And to me, that says a lot, I think, about his character and what he would be like as a governor.
Well, I haven't had you on since, but I think I had mentioned it on social media. You know, we had reached out to the Bob Ferguson campaign to fact check something he said on King 5. You know, he claimed he was never in favor of rolling back police pursuits, and we basically said, prove it. You've never said anything. And rather than answer our question and provide evidence, they said, we will not respond to your questions for comment anymore because I've endorsed another candidate in the race. And I thought, you know who does not only respond, but who's come on the show is Mark. So, like, Mark Mullett's willing to come on the show, even though I have endorsed someone else, but Bob Ferguson won't even respond to our request for comment. And well, I think it speaks to who he is.
Well, I think what we view as a giant positive is we're not trying to get into Bob's lane. Bob yeah. has his lane where he's at. We have no interest in being in that lane. Like, we've always been in this lane of common sense, reasonable public policy. And what we see now is Bob's trying to get into our lane. Like, he's comes out, oh, now I've got a policy to support police after I've done nothing but be yeah. adversarial towards police during my time in office. Oh, now I support actually going against Inslee on the ferry thing. Like, I've been saying that forever. I'm like, Inslee is responsible for the destruction of our ferry system by the insistence going back to that 2015 transportation package to have hybrid electric or nothing. And we ended up getting nothing. And now everyone who relies on the ferries is stuck with that as a consequence. And so it's the things that I've been public speaking out about. Now Bob all of a sudden is showing up very late to the game. And I think it's just because he's out there. Like, we're speaking about these things not because of polling, just because when you talk to average, not people in this far left liberal bubble, but you talk to average families in our state, these are the issues that have been very clear to us they care about. And we've been, I think, on the right side of those issues my entire time in public mm-hmm. office. And so I'm not a windsock just blowing back and forth. And I think Bob's trying to get into our lane. And we view that as actually a positive going into the primaries in a few months.
Yeah. Yeah. You have those, the fringes who try to moderate a little bit. And I'll say for both you and Dave Reichert, you're just sort of being who you've always been. I'm curious, and I don't think I've ever asked you this. Why not run as an independent? Because your party's shunning you anyway for Bob, right? I mean, are they not?
I've always felt like, I've had strong identification with the Democratic Party around women's reproductive rights, support of marriage equality. I've always acknowledged climate change is real. Like, these issues to me have always aligned me with the Democratic Party. I've always felt like the places where Democrats can make strides and improvement is around being more supportive of the business community. So it helps to have a small business owner in that room talking about that. I feel like the second, like my hope is to shift the Democratic Party into being more thoughtful and reasonable. And I think we've seen that with the Seattle City Council races. Like, I think Sarah Nelson is an excellent Seattle City Council president. She didn't have to abandon the Democratic Party. She is trying to shift Democrats in elected office towards a more reasonable way of thinking. And I think that's kind of what we need to have in Olympia. And that's my hope.
So it's not political expediency to just like have a D next to your name and hope that people circle it.
It's not.
Yeah.
And I do feel strongly around these other, you know, those social issues where I've always identified with Democrats.
Speaking of those, Bob Ferguson came out with what I have to imagine he believed was like the peace de resistance against Dave Reichert this past week.
There's
clip of Dave Reichert at a GOP event saying he believes marriage is between a man and a woman.
I was raised as a Christian, and marriage is between a man and a woman.
How do you think that's going to be used against him?
Well, I think you highlighted it on your show. I think you talked about it last week, and I think at the end you said, my fear is that it's too complicated. Like, they're just going to show the clip in the commercial.
Right.
And you can't explain, like, and that is, I mean, this is my fear, like, that, I think that, what you talked about, I think is accurate. And they're just going to show that clip. And in this state, you're on the wrong side of women's reproductive rights, wrong side of marriage equality. And those clips show that. Even if you can, like, when you're explaining, you're losing. I think that's sort of the normal rule.
Yeah.
In politics, and I think that's going to be the ultimate challenge. And I've always felt like my advantage of winning statewide in Washington is I don't have any clips of ever saying anything against those issues.
Yeah.
And so to me, my values align with where the majority of the voters are. And at the same time, I'm willing to speak up and say, hey, the Democrats aren't getting everything right. Like, we're clearly not getting affordability right. The state is becoming unaffordable on our watch. We have to change that. Public safety is going backwards on our watch. We have to change that. So I think even though I align with those social values, it doesn't mean that I'm just, you know, sitting back silently and unwilling to criticize our party when I know there's things we should be doing better.
Yeah, the same issue, though, that Dave is going to face with that clip that Bob will just, and I would do it too if I were Bob Ferguson's campaign. I would just put that clip on every commercial and just run with it. But he's also doing that when it comes to, like, his public safety record. He's rewriting history entirely and acting like a moderate, reasonable person. But the same principle applies where he'll say it. He'll say, I did X, Y, Z. And most voters are going to be like, oh, okay. They don't know the history. They don't know that he's manufacturing his positions on these things. So how do you combat that? When he's trying to act like a moderate, how do you, without explaining his losing, how do you kind of combat that narrative for voters?
Well, I think in the public safety, it's really easy because I can tell you when the Blake decision by the Supreme Court came down in 21, the person I was fighting in Olympia to prevent us from decriminalizing drugs was Attorney General Bob Ferguson. He was the one pressuring the legislature, and he was proud to be the one out. He was bragging about being the first Attorney General in the United States to push for decriminalization of drugs. And so we just have to make sure every voter before they fill out their ballot in July knows that Bob Ferguson was the attorney general who was telling the Washington State Legislature we should decriminalize possession of drugs like fentanyl and heroin and meth. I mean, this was his public position. He cannot change that. This isn't on some Breitbart website. This is on KUOW.
Yeah.
I mean, these are like legitimate news organizations that are just representing what his views were very publicly, telling the legislature how we should be voting on public safety issues. And you can't undo that.
Yeah, you and Dave and Semi, that's the clip I would pull, like KUOW. Because to me, like I'm pro-choice and I'm pro-gay marriage. I have been before most
Democrats. See, that's why we get along.
I mean, it's like, well, even, we talked about this the other day, even Barack Obama wasn't, you know, pro-gay marriage until 2012. And so, like, let's not act like Democrats are so far past that issue. But even with those, like, two big issues.
I think you were ahead of Barack, right?
I was ahead of Barack.
Yeah, see, kudos to Brandy.
Well, I'm younger. I've never been anti-gay marriage because we grew up, you know, with gay friends. It was much more acceptable and all that stuff. And I'm not religious. But
the point, like, for me as a voter, if I saw just those clips of, like, Dave Reichert saying marriage is between a man and a woman, which I just don't agree with, but that's his religious belief, and then I heard the clip of Bob Ferguson being like, let's legalize drugs. I'm like, that's the crazy one. Like, that's the extremist. So I would just play that clip all over the place.
We got to get the clip out, and that's the hope.
Wait,
that's what I'm trying to do.
I don't have to do that job for you. You have a campaign. You have money. You have the PACs supporting you. I have been urging you guys to take the First Mark challenge. Look, we all need insurance, right? Why not have someone handle your insurance needs for you for free, making sure that every year you have the best rate, that you have insurance to cover what's happening in your life? Casey in Covington took the First Mark challenge. He said, I want to thank you for telling us to check out First Mark. I did the First Mark challenge a couple weeks ago after receiving a ridiculous renewal statement from my insurance. We made the switch to policies with First Mark and walked away with slightly better homeowners insurance for the same price, nearly down to the dollar, and they managed to save us 37% off our auto quote for the same coverage. He said, right now, every dollar counts. I could not agree more. So take some time, schedule time to take the First Mark challenge today. I promise you, you will not regret it. And the best part is, you never pay them a dime for their services. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com, they work for you. Will the Fed drop interest rates or not? That is the question for a lot of home sellers right now. But as we await that decision, and a lot of it will frankly have to do with an election year and how much pressure the president is putting on the Fed to drop interest rates, there's still stuff you can do to get your home ready for the market. Go to sellwithwes.com. Start by asking Wes for a free market analysis. You can even plug your address in and see how much your home is worth using their home value calculator. It might be worth more than you think. And talk to Wes about their Listing Boost Concierge Service. So what that means is if you need some cosmetic upgrades to your home, they can come in, they can manage those projects, they can even help pay for those upgrades up front. SellWithWes.com, SellWithWes.com, a better way to sell your home. Don't take offense to this question.
That's always a dangerous way to phrase a question.
Well, look, you know, it's not like I haven't been honest with you that, and it's the same criticism. I mean, I have other criticisms of Semi Bird, but I don't think he can make it past the primary. And so that's why I find this whole convention thing silly. I still think it's very difficult for you to get past the primary. Will you support Dave Reichert against Bob Ferguson?
At this point, I have one focus. That's to get out of the primary.
I feel strongly
that I will get out of the primary. I don't see in that scenario, I'm optimistic I'm going to get out of the primary. Anyone running for office that's thinking about other alternatives probably shouldn't be running for office.
That's true. Promise me this, though. You'll never endorse Bob Ferguson. You promise me you'll never endorse Bob Ferguson.
And I have our strong differences. So Mark, let's leave it at that. But let's, how about this, Brandy?
Okay.
Why would I endorse Bob Ferguson in the general when I'm running against Bob Ferguson in the general?
Yes, I get it.
That would make no sense. I'm going to beat the guy.
You would be a bad candidate if you were already talking about losing. So I can 100% appreciate that. I worry so much about that outcome. I truly do worry about that outcome with Bob Ferguson.
And I mean, my favorite Ferguson pivot, this was, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks ago, where he had the 100 business owners for Bob.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So basically, I think he found the only 100 business owners he hadn't sued in the state of Washington. And the 100 people he hadn't sued were like, oh, I guess he could put me on the list.
Yeah. You know what's so funny about that is I looked at that list. I thought the same thing. And I was like, these have to be the worst business owners in the state. I was like, what is going on? Were they bribed?
I talked to one guy who just got a random email saying, congratulations, you're on Bob Ferguson's 100 business owner support list. And the guy emailed back saying, no, I'm not.
Oh my God.
So it made it sound like they sent out a thing like he won the sweepstakes or something.
I just assumed it was like businesses owned by his cousins, his second cousins, his children's whatever. You know, I was like, somebody. For you, like, what's the campaign strategy for you? We've got, what, 90 days?
90 days. I know. That's insane.
So what are you out there doing?
Last week I was in Eastern Washington. Like, I did events in Clay Elum. We're having an event coming up in Yakima the following week. Like, tonight I have two events. So you spend a lot of time calling people during the day. You spend a lot of time in the evening doing events, and you do them all throughout the entire state. And your goal, it's like the message, like from the day one, like I think for me, it's this affordability challenge where I think my wife and I are just at that weird stage in our life where our oldest daughter is a junior up at Western. It's like, she's a year away. Like, she's going to be on her own trying to afford to live in our region 12 months from now. And we're freaked out about how the hell she's going to afford it. And so this is really like the whole premise of just being kind of a dad on a mission who wants his six kids to actually be able to live in the place where my wife and I were both born and raised. And you know, my dad went to the same high school in Tuckwell I went to, Foster High School. He graduated in 61. My wife's dad went to Garfield. Like, our families have been here for generations. Yeah. And the thought that our own children won't be able to afford to raise their own families here is frightening. Yeah. And if that doesn't, if that's not a wake-up call that the state has to shift in a better direction, I don't know what is a wake-up call.
Yeah. Who are some of the Democrats? Like, what kind of Democrat? Because I've talked to a few in Seattle who, you know, are all in on Team Mullet. But what kind of, like, voter have you been able to break through to, do you think?
Well, this is what I think has been really interesting and eye-opening. This is why I think Ferguson has some challenging times ahead.
Yeah.
So I've talked to liberal people in Seattle who are left of me. Like, like, I voted against the long-term care payroll tax, and they actually support it. And I'm like, okay, I guess I found that 25%. But when we get to public safety, they are fed up. Yeah. They're fed up. And so even these really liberal voters in Seattle have reached the point where they need to be able to feel they can walk around in Seattle and feel safe. And so to me, that is Bob Ferguson's Achilles heel, is the fact that he's been on the wrong side of these public safety issues. And I think as voters learn that, this is, I think, where you start to pick up a lot of Democratic votes. Having endorsements from the law enforcement groups, it's not only unusual for a Democrat, but in this specific time and place, is actually a big positive. And so never getting caught up in defund the police and all these other places where the Democratic Party has shifted way too far to the left, I think shows that I can be independent and I can focus on what the average family in Washington wants us to focus on.
Can I ask you, because we had the disaster of the GOP convention, what is the process on the Democratic side? They don't go through a nominating process, or...
There hasn't been one so far, but it's, I mean, it's, obviously, I am not the establishment candidate.
I mean, I haven't seen them support you.
And
you
so I think, like, you look at some of the issues, like a Democratic priority is to remove the 1% cap on property taxes this session.
Yeah.
People know I was a Democrat who was very vocal. I was the only one in Senate Ways and Means to vote against that. People know the Democrats... You know, the Washington State Labor Council wanted people to get unemployment insurance for going on strike.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm not expecting the people who, when I'm the one saying, you guys are going too far. So I don't expect those people to be endorsing my campaign. But this is my hope, Brandy, is that there's a lot of Democrats out there who don't think they can afford higher property taxes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Democrats that want the uninsurance, you know, trust fund to be there to help people when they're laid off through no fault of their own, not to encourage people to go on strike. So I actually think, even though I'm out of touch maybe with some of the establishment Democratic goals, I'm actually in touch with where a lot of Democrats in the state of Washington feel about these issues.
But do you expect the state Democratic Party to actively work to campaign against you? Could they do that? I don't know what the rules are for them.
How about, I mean, in 2020, our own governor tried to take me out of my Senate
seat. That's why I'm saying it. Literally, so, he was out waving signs to get you out of your seat. So would you, do you expect them to do that to you?
It would not surprise me. So
that's why I say, Mark, ditch him. You don't need him. Like, join us in the land of, people need to belong to a party when they run political races because they expect the party infrastructure to support them to some extent. They're not supporting you anyway. Like, it's the two most reasonable people in this race are being shunned by their own parties right now. And to me, that's a positive. I just wish you and Dave would run as independents.
Yeah, I hear you.
I know. Because what are you losing through that? What do you lose through that?
But I feel like when you identify as a Democrat, you want other people, like, I want to improve the Democratic Party, not
Can't be improved. It needs to just be abandoned.
I mean, I am trying. And so, and I've been trying during my time in the Senate, and I've actually, I think I've been effective in the Senate to preventing some of the, I think, really egregious policies from getting to the finish line. I've been effective of getting some good policies passed. Like, we always made cities and counties pay a portion of the training academy in Berrien, because that was something we started in the recession back in 08, and I did a bill to undo that. Now the state's paying 100% of the cost for police to go through the training academy in Berrien. Like, so I'm still even effective, even if I'm out of touch with some of these other issues, I have strong bipartisan working relationships in Olympia, and I can get stuff done.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I mean, before it sounds like a Mark Mullett love fest, I have stringently disagreed with some of your votes, and you know that.
Yeah, we've talked about it.
And you came on and talked to me about it. We don't have to relitigate it, but, you know, Second Amendment issues and 5599 with the kidnapping of kids, which, honestly, when I had you on to talk about that, I wasn't even convinced that you supported the bill. It was just sort of like, oh, I feel bad for transgender kids. So, you know, there are certainly policy disagreements that I've had with you, but I expect that. I'm fine with that.
My hope is that the political discourse in our state needs to be where you can have disagreements without being disagreeable. And I would never vilify you over the fact that we might disagree on. I mean, we had 382 bills passed last session.
Yeah.
Who's going to agree with all 382 of your votes? Like nobody. And so, I mean, I voted against pickleball being the state sport. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have.
Good. Waste of time. Octopus farming. Did you vote against the octopus bill?
Did that pass?
Yeah, it did.
I might have voted.
Our state banned octopus farming when we don't even do any octopus farming. This is the kind of real serious stuff that Democrats are focused on in the state of Washington. It's just genuinely embarrassing. One other question I don't want you to be offended by, or you can be offended. That's fine. Like, I'm fine with that. I am genuinely, I think our government would be worse off without you in it. I do think that we need you to be that sort of, we've run out of moderates. Like, you're one of the last ones on the Democratic side. So I worry about the prospect, because you're choosing to run for governor over your Senate seat, correct?
Yeah, it's up or out. Like, you have to pick one.
You can't be on the ballot
same
twice.
Cycle. Yeah, my Senate seat and the governor's office are on the same political cycle.
So I would rather have you in some position in government than in no position in government. Have you considered, if the polling just isn't there by any stretch by filing day, to go back to your Senate seat or insurance commissioner or something like that?
And I think it goes back to what we were talking about before. Like,
you'd be a crappy candidate. I'm optimistic. Yes.
Like, I feel like the issues, when we talk to people about affordability and public safety, they're like, wow, this is awesome. Yeah. We have a Democrat talking about the issues we care about. Mm-hmm. And so we're optimistic. Things are going to go well. And I think you look at, like, we talked about the property tax, you know, removing that 1% cap. Mm-hmm. We talked about unemployment insurance for striking workers. Like, there's no other role I can be in Olympia next year that will prevent those from passing except for the governor's office. That is the only place where you can bring common sense and sanity back to public policy in Olympia next year.
Those would get your veto pen and if you were the governor.
Don't let the ink get dry.
Yes. And,
I think it's, you know, because you look at the landscape and both the Senate seats in Southwest Washington, which is where we have the Joe Kent, Marie Perez race.
Yep.
Both the incumbent Republican senators are not running again. Mm-hmm. So, and then you're going to have this whole thing over in Yakima. And I want to be clear. I was the Democrat who signed on saying I thought the redistricting commission should have gone back and drawn new maps. Yeah. I mean, we have a bipartisan process. I was actually publicly and vocal, which is what I think my role is to be publicly and vocal, even if I think the Democrats, it takes very little political courage to attack the other party. I think all political courage is when you're willing to attack your own party when you think they're not doing something right. I was not happy with what happened in Yakima. I think Nikki Torres has been a great senator from over there, and I don't think it was fair the way they did the redistricting. But that's put that seat in play, and you already have the Whidbey Island seat in play, and you even have other seats now. Like, the Wenatchee district now comes over because when they redrew Yakima, it changed other districts, and now they have, like, Snoqualmie Ridge is now in the same district.
Yeah, which is wild.
As Wenatchee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the 12th legislative district, half of it's now in Western Washington. So this is my fear is, like, every time Trump's been on the ballot, Democrats have picked up seats in this state. And I think the same thing is going to happen this year. And so even if I was in the Senate, I don't think I could stop those same bills.
What do you think your party would do with a supermajority?
I mean,
does that terrify you as much as it terrifies me, even though it's your own party?
It would not be, I don't think it would be a healthy outcome to have supermajorities. I've had the unique role in the Senate now my entire time of working on the capital budget. It's our state construction budget. The beauty of the capital budget is you actually need a 60% vote in our state to issue bonds to build stuff.
Yep.
if I had to look at where I think we've done the best public policy, it's on the capital budget side. And that's because, like, my budget's passed 49-0. I actually go to Eastern Washington, listen to people in Eastern Washington, hey, what projects are important to you? And I look at, like, the Yakima Integrated Plan, which is how we manage our water resources mm-hmm. over there. People used to say, why are you giving so much money to this Eastern Washington water stuff? And I'm like, first off, we're doing Puget Sound cleanup as well. Right. And two, if you look at the Colorado River Basin, they're out of water. Like, California, Arizona, Nevada are all screaming at each other, the last drops of water in the Colorado yeah. River. The national model is the Yakima Integrated Plan in yeah. Washington State, which is something that, yeah, in the west side of the mountains wasn't important, but when you actually go to Eastern Washington, you actually listen to Republicans, like, you can pass budgets in this state that actually listen to people from both urban and rural voices, and it ends up being better public policy.
So you think with a supermajority, Eastern Washington would be essentially forgotten about?
It would not be positive. Hmm. And so that is, I feel it's actually, things that you pass on a bipartisan basis last, mm-hmm. they survive the test of time much better.
Yeah.
And to me, that's the beauty. Like, if you look at our paid family leave policy in 2017, that was bipartisan. We've had to fix that like three times. Yeah. When we go back to fix it, we do it together. Then you look at the long-term care payroll tax. That's a disaster. Party line vote. And now Democrats are like, oh, we need to fix this. And Republicans mm-hmm. are like, you shouldn't have passed it to begin with. And now it's on the initiative, you know, and I'm obviously supporting the initiative to make that optional. I think that's better public policy. So to me, that's the beauty of bipartisan legislation. Once you have supermajorities, it's really challenging. You're just going to get a lot of party line votes,
freaky.
And they're not going to be good public policy that helps both rural and urban voices equally.
And I will tell you what governor would not stand up against the Democratic Party: Bob Ferguson. Like, he's signing everything they send to his desk if it's a supermajority. You mentioned, and I'll end here, that, you know, I agree with you on the sentiment. It's one of the reasons we get along, is it is easier to speak out against the other party than to criticize your own party. And so we started the interview by talking about the GOP convention. But, you know, Dave Reichert withdrew himself from the process. He thought it was a little bit chaotic and maybe lowbrow, which I would agree with. Do you think that that blunts the criticism you or Bob might have of him, that he's too right-wing or too conservative for the state, the fact that he didn't even get the Republican Party's endorsement? Does that help him?
I don't understand. I can't really speak too much to those mm-hmm. dynamics. I think that I have not spent a lot of time, obviously, in this race. I'm not out here to bash Semi Byrd and Dave Reichert. Mm-hmm. I am saying, hey, I am a moderate Democrat. I have been willing to stand up to my party on issues where I think they're out of touch with the average family in our state. And I've been really vocal that I've been willing to stand up to Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson. And so to me, that's the message to get through, and what, you know, how that plays out of how, you know, Dave managed that whole process this last weekend, I really can't speak to it.
Man, I'll tell you, I would love, like, my dream would be day after the primary, it's like you and Dave, because then I feel like we can just pack it up and focus on other things, because I mean, I just feel so much less anxiety about the potential outcome for the state. So you also, I think, have a really good opportunity in the next 90 days, because Bob's attacking Dave, Dave's attacking Bob, Semi Byrd's attacking Dave. And so you can just be out there making your case to people.
We're trying to do that.
Yes.
We are trying to just make our case around why we think the issues we're talking about are the ones the voters care about. And I know I've mentioned this to you before. I think the challenge on the Republican side to beat Bob Ferguson is, I always use the Idaho example. Like, I don't see people in Idaho supporting a governor who's against the Second Amendment. Like, they don't think that governor can actually change. Like, the legislature in Idaho is going to be Republican. It's not the fact that they're worried about them undoing any of the laws. It's just they don't want to vote for a governor who doesn't line up with them on an important piece of public policy. And I think that's the challenge, I think, because you look at Kim Wyman, mm-hmm. she was a pro-choice Republican, and she was elected on a statewide basis. And so I think the Republicans who've been successful, and that goes back to 2012, and this is even a more toxic political climate when it comes to women's reproductive rights. And so I think that, to me, is what I say to Republicans, is we got to shift in a smarter direction. The best way to do that is to have someone who's going to beat Bob Ferguson in the general election. And if you think you know, a pro-life governor is going to beat Bob Ferguson in Washington State, then that means an anti-Second Amendment Democrat can win in Idaho. And I don't think any Republican thinks that's a viable option right now. And so it is, you have to really make people realize we're playing chess, not checkers, and we want to make sure we put forward a strong candidate who can make sure our state shifts in a better direction.
Yeah, I can see the point you're making. I think he can win, or I wouldn't have endorsed him. But I do see the concern there. That's like, you for sure would win in a general election face-off. And he Dave Reichert, it's going to be a hell of a challenge. So, Mark Mullett, thank you as always for coming in, gracing us with your Democratic presence, Democratic. No, good luck to you, and we'll be watching to see what's coming out for your campaign in the next 90 days.
Hey, thanks for having me back on.
So that's my conversation with State Senator Mark Mullett, who is a moderate Democrat running for governor. As I told the senator, you know, I still fail to see, similar to Sammy Byrd, how in the current makeup of the field he anticipates getting past the primary election. He really is banking on two things to continue. Three things. The dysfunction within the Republican Party and divisions. You're splitting the Republican votes in the primary, and then he's hoping two Democrats will go through. He's counting on continued spending. There's some big PAC money spending on his behalf. And then he's counting on a continued onslaught of stories about Bob Ferguson failing specifically on the public safety front, which Bob tries to spin it and spin it and spin it. But as Mark well knows, Bob's been a failure on public safety, and that's an issue a lot of people care about right now. So I don't know about you guys, but I'm very excited to see how the August primary shapes up. You only get one retirement. Do not risk it, especially in 2024 with a crazy presidential election, global unrest, unpredictable markets. You work too hard for your retirement. Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital specialize in managing risk. I suggest having a free Know Your Risk portfolio review with Zach and his team at Bulwark. He also hosts the Know Your Risk radio podcast. The review is just a good way to see if you're overexposed to risk. In fact, there's no obligation. They don't even let you invest with them at your first meeting. So whether you become a client or not, I can assure you, you'll leave much more informed about the risks to your retirement. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Seeing all this crazy stuff going on in the world, more than ever, I just want to focus on my family and my friends and building meaningful memories together. And hey, it wouldn't hurt if we build memories in a place where it's sunny 300 days a year. If that sounds appealing to you, check out the grand opening of Natchez RV Resort Phase 2, May 18th and May 19th. The Phase 2 grand opening weekend features 21 extra large RV lots with water, power, sewer, and grand opening pricing starting at only $79,900. Natchez RV Resort has year-round family fun, fishing, hunting, snow skiing, golf, river rafting, outstanding wine tasting, and more. You can enjoy the brand new 4,300 square foot clubhouse with a gourmet kitchen, great room, fitness center. The swimming pool and hot tub are coming soon. Natchez RV Resort Phase 1 sold out quickly, so make sure to reserve your showing for the grand opening weekend, May 18th and 19th. 800-422-6009 or NatchezRVResort.com. It's almost summer. If you're not looking and feeling your best, I have the perfect plan for you. It's called the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic Program. I lost almost 40 pounds on the program. I've kept it off for more than a year, and I lost 30 pounds of that in the first 2 months. So heck, if you begin the program now, you could be looking and feeling a lot better in just a month or two, with plenty of time for summer. So do what I did and what so many others have done. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. The program isn't magic, but I promise, if you stick to it like most patients, you could lose 20 to 30 pounds in about a month or two. Man, Mark's got balls. I'm just saying, like, I don't want to think about what's going on. That's just, I mean, Nicole, why? Why is it always something with you? Cojones. There guts.
You okay, I like it.
I should have just said guts to begin with.
Yeah, that one would
have worked. Yeah, I mean, in today's political environment, he's willing to go scorched earth on his own party. Not that he's not critical of Republicans, but you got to admire him for that, even if you don't agree with some of his policies.
Yeah, I know. You know what? He makes me want to vote for him because, like you said, I think that if he was up against Ferguson, I think he might be able to win because he would get all the rest of us and some of those. And I mean, now, I like I said yesterday, I want to win.
Yeah.
I want to win.
Yeah.
So now I'm going back and forth.
Between Reichert and Mullet?
I mean, I got to see the way it works out. But right now it looks ugly.
It does.
On the Reichert.
Well, no, look, I mean, if Republicans split the vote and that's what they end up doing, Mark gets through, he will win. He will win because all the Republicans will vote for him and there's a chunk of Democrats who would vote for him as well. So that actually is the worst case scenario for Bob in his mind because he knows it's hard for a Republican to win.
And I actually love the idea of him being forced to debate him because that would be a fun debate to watch.
100%. I love a good debate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, Mark, I didn't relitigate it with him in this interview because we've talked about it with him so much before. I think the hard thing for Republicans, his support of 55-99 is borderline unforgivable to me. I mean, I forgive him like in the sense that I'm not going to not, you know, totally dismiss him because of that one vote. But then his vote on gun control issues, you know, he voted to ban, quote unquote, the semi-automatic assault style rifles. He said he did it because he believes that's what the people of his district would want, which I think is true. I think in that district, suburban, outside of Seattle, So it's hard to kind of argue on that front, but I see it as an erosion of our constitutional rights, and we rely on those rights to do our job. So it's hard for me to get past anyone in power who'd erode constitutional rights. Because why would I ever feel like the other ones are safe, as obvious as it may seem that they are?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't see him voting like that on the other constitutional rights. I mean, not that there's the opportunity to, but I don't know. He's just so nice.
He's a nice
guy. Such a nice guy. He's just a dad and a business owner and just a nice guy.
Yeah, we like having him.
It's easy to get behind him and trust that he would make good choices.
Well, I have no questions about whether he would push back against Democrats. So what I really want out of this at the end of 2024 is I want to feel like we have a meaningful check on a party that's power is running out of control.
Yep.
I do believe, even though he is a Democrat, that he would provide far more of a check than Governor Inslee ever hazarded. I don't think he'd sign on to new taxes or some of these programs and the bloated government that we've seen, public safety issues, big fat veto, gun control. Those are the things where I'm like, but you can't always get what you want or everything you want.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also think that he is much less ideologically driven.
100%.
So he just makes choices based on values and beliefs and things like that. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah, he's a pragmatist for sure. He's not an idealist, and that's what we need.
Really, he's
fewer ideologues.
So I don't really feel like it'd be a Democrat.
He should be running as an independent. Let's all be honest about that. So I think there's a lot of like politicians who feel that way and they're scared to take that leap. I've been telling Jim Farrell for years, Jim, just be an independent. You know, because even my thing with Mark is, it's not like the Democrats are being nice to you or something. It's not like they're being fair to you. It's not like they even accept you as one of their own. So why, you just leave them alone.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The thing that does worry me, though, is if it was to come down to those two, Ferguson and Mullet, that it would really be hard to get a lot of Republicans out to vote. So I feel like the numbers would drag quite a bit, and that would hurt some of the other positions.
I disagree, because if Trump's on the ballot, Republicans are going to come out and vote.
But we're a throwaway.
Yeah, but they're going to want to fill in the circle. They're going to want to.
Maybe the semi-the Republicans.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, well, I don't know. We'll see.
There's a lot of daylight between now and August, and then we'll reassess all of this. All right, Nicole, thank you very much. Thank you all. We're doing a special series of episodes this week, in-depth interviews while we're in the sunny, you're in the Bahamas, I'm in Florida. And then also we're moving into a new studio. So that's happening as we're on vacation. And it's very, very exciting. But we'll see you back here tomorrow with another in-depth interview. This one's good. We've got a member of Gays Against Groomers. I'll tell you, it's one of the best interviews, one of my most favorite interviews that I've done on the show to date. Loved it. David's awesome. So don't miss the show tomorrow.